us and had the bad luck of hearing me, you might just go to sleep now, because, like I said before, it's very special for me to be here. First of all, for Harav, Rav Waxman has ties to me that are in many ways unbreakable. When I was in ninth grade at MTA, the first Rebbe I had to teach me Tehillim on Sunday mornings, when frankly neither of us wanted to be in MTA, was Rav Waxman's father, Chaim Waxman, who went on to become a distinguished Jewish sociologist. But not only was he my Rebbe for Tehillim, but he was also my carpool, because every Sunday we lived in Yonkers, and he lived in Yonkers for a while, and he picked me up and take me to MTA. It's kind of, so I appreciate him kind of like somebody condemned to death appreciates the guards who come to take him from his cell to death row. But it was very special. Also, he's been a significant influence on two of my three sons, Avery and Noam, who had the zechus of learning here. And that's a thanks that you can never repay. So I am, not only am I familiar with Shalavim, I feel not just like a beneficiary, but I feel like a partner in it, because I gave them my children, and they did well by it. I have only one question. Is the food any better? No, huh? Okay. Well, but they do your laundry, right? So what do you want? Pretty good. So look, I am very proud of my children. But in many ways, and this is, I need to say this to you, they have a Shalavim signature on them. And that they're serious about their Torah, right? But they're open and loving. They take their life seriously, but they don't take themselves seriously. I think Esther and I gave that to them, but it was only reinforced in this place. They've come out with an Avas Torah and an Avas Yisrael that is fierce and wonderful. My son, my eldest son, Avery, is a musnuch now, and he's the dean of students at the Fuchs Mizrahi School in Cleveland. Spent several years as a Rebbe in Ramaz, and his wife is a wonderful teacher, and they take pretty good care of my three grandchildren. But he has about him that sense of knowing who he is, being modest in his Torah, although his achievements are much more than he thinks they are. And he carries himself comfortably. Also, he plays a mean game of basketball. And his younger brother, Noam, spent 2 years here as well. And every person is different. So in a much more quiet and private way, Noam gained the skills to feel like he could own learning. And went on to YU. Did I mention to you that they went to Yeshiva University? And went on to YU before I was president. And went on to YU, and just so much of who they are was shaped by this. My youngest son, the rock star, Nachum Joel, or Maccabees fame, did not come here, because his two older brothers did come here, and he went to spend 2 years elsewhere. Is also a wonderful kid. So I don't want to say no, because thank God, Shalavim is a great school. It's not alone. There are other schools like Shalavim that provide wonderful education, and you have to know Chanoch Lanar Al Pi Darko, what's the personality and the capacity of each student, and where should they be. But I just am very happy to very publicly say that I am a fan, a supporter, an admirer, a grateful partner with the Hanhala and the Rabbanim and the Rabbeim of this yeshiva, and I think you chose real well. But I also know that in choosing, there's a Masorah in terms of how people choose and what they choose. So it's something of a reflection on you that you chose to be here. And I just hope that you gain strength both in your learning and in your attitudes and in terms of your hashkafa, and that you keep growing. Now clearly, we've been pretty good. Probably every third minute there's a different Rosh Yeshiva from YU who comes here, who just happens to be in the neighborhood, who just happens to eat with you and then give a shiur and stuff. You know what YU is. And I'm happy when we have questions to answer any questions you have. You know, as a parent, I think that you should, if you have the capacity, that you should all continue your growth at YU. But I also know that you're going to be a great bracha to Klal Yisrael wherever you go to learn. just make sure that you listen to your yeshiva and know that this is not supposed to be your farewell to a life of committed learning, but it's supposed to be a launching pad. And that the rest of your life is not dealing with disappointment of not being at Nofai alone, right? But it's supposed to be saying, armed with what I have here, and with what my parents have given me, and with my own soul, how do I make the next chapter a L'chatchila chapter and not a B'dievet chapter? The pitch is that I think the best place to do that is at YU, and I promise you I'll be good then. And after I say that you really deserve to have it all, you have the capacity. You have to define what the all is. But in doing it, the next years are critical, whether it's in 6 months or in 18 months that you move on. The next years are critical to you, and be someplace where you can explore the ideas of the world and you can explore excellence and quality. Be in a place where Torah is your companion and your friend and not a hobby. And be at a place with a network of people who will be your best friends forever and that will make sure that you are never alone physically or spiritually. And finally, be in a place that's personal enough that they will invest in you being able to reach your highest success aspirations. Now, a couple of words of biography in case it's helpful to you. I'm just a guy. You've met all my Gedolei Hador who come and teach you. I'm a recovering lawyer. The only thing that was certain in my life was that I would never be president of Yeshiva University. It was the only thing that I knew for sure. So you should just understand that we worship a God who sometimes has a macabre sense of humor. I grew up in Yonkers, New York. I went to Yeshiva University High School. I had a sufficiently glorious experience at MTA that wild horses couldn't get me to go to YU. One of the few regrets in my life is that I'm a high school educated Jew. I work at it, but I went to another school, but thank God I had the good fortune of falling into friendships with YU guys and to start doing youth outreach work with what was then called the Youth Bureau of YU. And I went to school not far from the campus, so I would be welcomed and sit in occasionally. I'm not a Talmud of the Rav. I'm the only person at YU who says that. But I got to probably sit in on 7, 8, 9 of his public shiurim, and because I was close to someone, I had a zechus of being in his apartment with a handful of people who would talk about social issues. So I had a window on who he was. But like everybody else in the world, I in fact understood the Rav. One little comment on that, I mean, when I became president, there was a 6-month period when I was president-elect, and I was still running the Hillel organization in Washington, so I'd spend 2 nights a week at Yeshiva because I wanted to know the place, and they provided me with, they said, well, you know, we can put you up at a hotel. I said, I'd rather stay on campus. Is there a place in the dorms? They said, well, you could stay in the Rav's apartment. I said, no, I couldn't possibly stay. They said, well, it's really the president's apartment. You know, the Rav died. I said, fine. I said, so I walked into this apartment and I remembered being with the Rav, and I promise you, I said, I'm never going to be able to sleep here. You know, I'm going to have to sleep standing up with my suit on. So over the years, I'm tired enough that when we stay on campus, we stay in the apartment, but the presence of the Rav is always there. However, Yeshiva University is not a memorial to the Rav. There was a YU before the Rav. There's a YU after the Rav. I think our commitment, if we all want to have a glorious life, is to really work at learning the Rav's Torah, but to learn Torah as it is. What do I think we have, in our world? For me, it's clear that I grew up with a hashkafa that Torah is our life, but the Torah is supposed to be something that, through the lens of Torah, we're supposed to embrace all the rest of life. And all the chachmas of the world. We believe in the menorah that has the central stem is Torah, and the 6 other stems are the 6 chachmas ha'olam, the other wisdoms of the world, and they're part of the sanctity of life. And if you know in the menorah, the arms of the menorah, the branches of the menorah are all pointed inward toward the Torah branch. But we believe that we should be owning the wisdom of the world, based, looked at through the lens of Torah, and that as we do that, we're supposed to take on the world and we're supposed to matter in the world. I've been very lucky in having the chance to do it, and it's because I married the right woman 37 years ago. 37, it's like a grown-up, right? So I went to NYU undergraduate. After that, I went to NYU law school because I was going to be a lawyer and fix the world. When I got to law school, I got a little confused because I didn't hear much about fixing the world. I had an internship in the district attorney's office in the Bronx. And it was the only job I applied for. So I was an assistant DA while I was the youth director at the Young Israel of Oceanside in Long Island. And I won't tell you the story of my romance with my best friend, but it started about 38 years ago, and it still goes strong. And I was going to practice law. Rabbi Norman Lamb, became president of Yeshiva. He had known me through some youth work. He called and asked me if I would like to go to Cardozo, which was their new law school, and they were looking for an assistant dean. I said, boy, that'd be cool. I could get to call myself a dean, and I could wear my yarmulke, and I could be involved in chinuch, which I liked, and I could be a lawyer. So I said yes, little did I know. So I was the chief operating officer of Cardozo for about 8 years. After a year, I became associate dean. The faculty elected me a professor. I taught a little bit of criminal law, and for many years I taught legal ethics. And we really had a wonderful life. I didn't know what was going to be next. I'm talking to those of you who are worried about career planning. And we'll talk about that in a second. I was then going to decide it was time to earn a living, and I had received an offer from a Wall Street law firm because I had been a dean and a professor, and they were going to give me a shot. And Esther, my wife, wasn't terribly happy. She didn't think I would be happy doing that. And out of the blue, I was called by the Hillel organization, which had been spending 2 years looking for a president, and asked if I would talk to them about being president of Hillel, which was ridiculous because I had no experience doing any of that except I was a youth director, I had worked for YU, and I was a law school dean. Talked to them a little bit. I then said, thank you very much, no, because Hillel was based in Washington. We were living in New York. I went home, and my wife told me that I better go talk to them and have an interview. And I said, thank you very much, sweetheart, but I'm going to take this job in law. She said, there are enough good lawyers. And I said, we have a wonderful life. She said, very few people get to have a wonderful life. We're going to get to have two wonderful lives. I said, sweetheart, please. She said, you're not going to be happy practicing law. You're going for an interview. So she forced me to get on a plane, go to Washington, go to an interview. I wasn't invested in the job, so of course they liked me. And to my horror, they offered me the job. And Esther made me take it. And we then moved to Washington, to Silver Spring, had 15 really unbelievably wonderful years raising our children, and I had the zechus of helping to rebuild a really important organization responsible for Jewish life on non-Jewish campuses around the world. Every major university, except Yeshiva University, has a Hillel. And we built 27 Hillels in the former Soviet Union and Hillels in South Africa. And we really worked to build up Hillel as a Jewish identity organization, primarily for the 90% of Jews who aren't Orthodox. When I was at Hillel, people would ask me, as Orthodox, should they go to Penn or should they go to YU? I would always then say to them, that's the wrong question. The right question is YU a match for your kid? If YU is a match for your kid, then Harvard can't compete. And YU is just a different place than everything else. If YU is not a match, I can tell you about 15 places where your child will be safe and will be fine with friends, but I'm not sure they'll grow Jewishly. And that's still my answer, by the way. And I didn't know what we were going to do afterwards because I loved Washington, and the only thing we knew is we'd never move to New York. That wouldn't be a good thing because who likes New York? I watched as Yeshiva University spent a couple of years looking for a president. We sent all our kids to YU, giving them choices, but they knew that we thought they should be there. I was something of a critic. I thought YU was too cold and wasn't aspiring enough for its kids, but they had gone through a hard period as well. And I was a profound student of Rabbi Norman Lamb, who's almost every book I have read and who I knew and loved till this day. And I didn't know what they were going to do to replace him. I was contacted by a search committee early on, since I was one of the Jewish names that people knew in organizational life, and I refused to be a candidate because I am neither a Rav nor a Gaon, and I thought the job would kill me. I was right about that. And I just said, I'm not who you're looking for. 2 years later, they came back and kind of drafted me, and again, my wife told me to do it. I have to have a talk with her. And I have spent 7.5 years in a really intense job, but with the zechus of working for you and doing something that I think matters. And I tell you all of this for the following reason. as you go on in your life. Don't be fixated and neurotic about how you're going to make a living. Work on deciding on a path and give yourself the educational background and the tools. But I must tell you, no matter what you plan, you are not in the driver's seat alone. You might be the co-pilot. There's a pilot. Right? And even if you are really going to focus on it, you don't know the paths that will come your way. I mean, I'm talking to you guy to guy. I'm the president of Yeshiva University. Never in a million years was that the path for me. And I still don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. I kind of would like to be a little boy. That's what I'm aspiring to. Right? It's much more important than figuring out how to make a living, how to live a life. Okay? What really matters to you, who your best friends are, how you build intimacy of a relationship, how you make Torah your companion in life and your guide in life. I just promise you, with that, as that comes, as you find your best friend with whom you're going to live your life, the rest will come. You're all good enough. If you just reach to equip yourself well, right, and look deeply into what it means to be alive. You know, I mentioned that my son Nachum is one of the Maccabees to start. Teasing. I mean, he's the one in the middle who flips his latkes in there. I flip my latkes. These are great, and by the way, we've gotten more positive public relations out of this one silly song, right, than from anything we have done, hashkafically, academically, right? This little video, which is now at 3,430,000, 4 million something and 30,000, just ridiculous, right? And I was trying to think of why, and it's because people look at these guys who take life seriously but don't take themselves so seriously, right? Who are unadulteratedly who they are, you know, Torah Umana Jews, right? Who embrace the culture but not at the cost of compromising who they are, and they celebrate their lives. Okay, that's a great formula for success, fellas, and that's what you have to do and you have to look to do. And I just have to tell you, it's there. It requires work. It requires work, but work like an investment, not like a sacrifice. It requires your putting yourself into it and maybe being tired. But it gives you such unbelievable joy. The life that Ribbono Shel Olam has given us is one of enormous joy. So along those lines, I'll kind of message fairly briefly. There's a story that's told that when Disney World was built in Orlando, Florida, Roy Disney was escorting a group of executives on a tour of Disney World. And in the middle of the tour, one of the executives turned to Roy Disney and said, you know, it's really a pity that your brother, Walt Disney, didn't live to see this. And Roy Disney turned to the guy and said, you're wrong. He did see it. That's why it's here. Ezahu chacham haroes hanolad. Right, the notion of vision, of saying, this is what I see. This is what I see for me. This is what I see for my people. This is what I see for my family. This is what I see for Klal Yisrael. Right? The vision of what your life is critically important. It doesn't live alone. You have to invest in it. You have to figure out how to make it real. But what's your vision? What's your vision for where you're going? So there's a new book published in America by Frank Luntz. Frank Luntz is a little bit in your father's business. Frank Luntz is a public opinion survey research guy. He teaches adjunct at Penn. And he's the star pollster of the Republican Party. And he does a lot of interviewing and focus groups on Fox News. So you might have seen him. His name is Frank Luntz, a Jewish guy. And he wrote a book called What Americans Really Want. And it's a compilation of different public opinion surveys he's done and research that he's done on the question of, in contemporary times, what do Americans really want? And he came up with a list of the top five things that Americans want most. Okay, so what are the top five things that Americans really want? Okay, you're part of the program. What's the answer? Name one.
Money.
Money. Number two.
Happiness.
Happiness. Sorry?
Second car.
Second car. Louder, please.
Job.
Spouse. What, spouse? Okay, here are the top five. Ready? Survey says. The five things that Americans want most. Number one, listen carefully though. Number one, more money. More, by the way, not wealth, not fortune, more money. Number two, fewer hassles. Number three, more time. Number four, more options. Number five, no worries. More money, fewer hassles, more time, more options, no worries. Okay? Now, let's not put that down. It's a real sense in America today that things are just coming at me and I need some yosher. I need some relief. So it didn't say I want to be rich. I just want some more money. I just want some more money. Okay? Fewer hassles. There are all kinds of hassles. I told in the other schools. I might as well tell you here. I kept thinking about what does it mean, fewer hassles. Everyday life gets filled with hassles. In America, I assume here too, have you ever tried to go to buy a scissors? So you go buy a scissors. I assume you go and you buy a scissors. They put it in a bag. You take it home. Not today with all the safety features and the like. So scissors come, you've seen them, in these hard, clear plastic containers that a lot of things come, right? It's cardboard on the bottom. The scissors are in there, and then there's this plastic container. And you take it home, and you say, okay, I'm going to now open the... Have you ever tried to open any of these safety things? So you start, right? So you start with the, with the place with the cardboard and the plastic mesh, and you're trying to find the place where you can separate the two, and all you're doing is getting a plastic cup instead of a paper cup on your fingers. So that's not going to work. Then you're smart, and you look on the plastic. There must be a place where it says, pull here. But never mind, there's never a place that says pull here. Right? Then you get a little bit frustrated and you say, I know how I can do this, and you start banging it on the thing and nothing happens then. Right? Then you look around and you say, okay, I know it's dumb to do this, and I know I can't have to make sure nobody's watching, right? Although everybody else must do this. What do? Then? You bite into it, right? You try to figure out with your teeth you can get it, you give it. Finally, your wife comes by, and I said, I can't open this. And she said, well, have you used some scissors? I said, I can't get to the scissors. They're in the plastic. That's what I mean by hassles. It's just hard. It's just, there's all this, you know what I mean? There's all this stuff, right? You want an easy scholarship from YU. There are just 29 forms you have to fill out, and you have to email the right person who will tell you it's the wrong address and it's the wrong thing. I don't even need to be wrong. It's a lot, and it's in your face. And the social media haven't made it easier. Right? In fact, I mean, you get to do a lot, but it's also somewhat depersonalizing. Right? A perfect stranger friends you. Who are you to friend me? You're not my friend. Nobody hugs you on the internet. You do texting all the time, right? Do you ever use adjectives anymore? Does anybody say, I'm very happy to be calling you? Very is four letters. I don't have time for that. Anybody ever spell you with a Y? We used to do that. We really did. It was Y-O-U. I don't know how many of you remember that. But everything's gotten more... And by the way, me all the time. Why haven't you answered me? I just emailed you yesterday, along with 800 other people every day. Right? But I mean, email. Everything is in your face. So when people say, I want fewer hassles. I want some more money. I want time. I want more time. Because everybody's really at me. I want options. Let me have some options. And let me not have worries. Can I just breathe freely? We're talking about time management, right? Let me just breathe freely. That's what most Americans want. That's the vision. Is it enough? Does it do it for you? I mean, I'd like all those things. It would be all of those things are really important to me. Gosh, even as president, imagine more money, fewer hassles, more time, more options, and no worries. I'd be in president heaven. It'd be a great place. I'd be the only one there, too, by the way. That'd be really nice. It's not enough. What do I do then? Osma. So, you can put me in a casket. I'll have more money, right? And more options and more time. And nothing to do. What do we want? What is it that we want? What's the vision for us? That's just not going to do it. You want your life to be something more than more. Right? And at your age, look, you think you have forever, but you also know it's not forever. It ends. And how are you going to make... That's why I say don't worry about making a living, worry about living a life. How do you make every day count? Tehillim, I learned this from your father. teach us to number our days that we may attain a heart of wisdom. Another way of saying it is, how do we count time to make sure that time counts for us? Right? You know, even the first mitzvah we're given as a people, Achodesh Hazel Achem Rosh Chodeshim, saying, you know what, when you were slaves, time owned you. Now you're free, you own time, what are you going to do with it? And what do we do with it? We're Mekadesh. By Kiddush HaLavana, by making the month, God is offering us a partnership. Because we decide when Yom Tov is. We get to be Mekadesh the Chol. That's the master lesson, and the question is, how do you get to do that beyond the fewer hassles, more time, more money? I guess the brief Devar Torah is last Shabbos, you were all tremendously aware of the master moment in the Parsha. Right? Kol Salma Leves Yaakov V'Sagid Levnei Yisrael Atam Re'isem Asher Asisi Mitzrayim. You saw what I did to Egypt. Ve'esa Eschem Al Kanfei Nesharim. That I took you out on the wings of eagles. The Avias Chemelai, and I brought you to me. So wait a minute. I don't know, that's not the story I read. I thought he dragged them out in the sand and schlepped them across the sea and took them either to Har Sinai or en route to Eretz Yisrael. What is this Al Kanfei Nesharim, and what is this the Avias Chemelai? What's Hashem telling us? It seems to me that the poetry of your life starts with that. Hashem isn't giving you the narrative, he's giving you the aspiration. Don't you understand, I didn't drag you out of slavery. I put you on the wings of eagles, so you get to soar. So you get to soar. You're going to be up in the heavens. My wings are going to protect you because you're higher than the other birds, and the only thing that, on top of my wings where you're standing, right, is heaven. Is heaven. And you now have the ability to soar. And am I taking you to Sinai? Am I taking you to Eretz Yisrael? No. No. V'yavi eschem elai. You're coming to me. The journey, the aspiration of the Jew from slavery is to reach out toward God and to do it not by schlepping through the desert but soaring on wings of eagles. That's the beginning. Why or how? Then Hashem gives it to you. The great statement of the great bargain, the great covenant. What is it? The atah, now. In Shema Atishmu Bakali, if you listen to my voice, Ushmartem Esprisi, and observe my covenant. The Hayisan Li Segula Mikolo Amin Pilikola Aretz, and you make yourselves chosen to me. You be the choosing people. You choose to make yourselves special to me, because the whole world is mine. If you do those things, then what do you get for it? The Atem Ti Yuli Mamlech Eskoanim Bagoy Kadosh. You get to be my poster child. You get to live a life of such quality that you get to model it to the world and say, this is how we get to live. And join us together and we're going to make life better. We're going to advance civilization. The great covenantal moment that makes us a people worth being. Right? If we are a people of memory and we're a people of destiny, it's not because of our genes. Right? It's not because of our food. And it's not because of a common language. It's because we have a covenant with the Rabbanu Shalom that we're going to live our lives in a certain way and matter to the world and be fulfilled. That's what it is. That's what it is. I'll tell you a story. I have a friend named Joe McShane. Actually, it's the very Reverend Joseph McShane. He's the president of Fordham University. He's a Jesuit priest. And Joe and I became friends. I brought him to YU one day for lunch. And he said to me, Richard, I wonder, could you show me your Beit Midrash? I said, sure. I walked down the street with him. In those days, the main Beis Medrash was in the same building as MTA. And we went in and we went to the Beis Medrash and I introduced him to some of the Rabbeim and he talked to some of the students and he looked at what was going on. And you have to understand, if you bring someone into this building who doesn't know, who's not Mishalani, and they walk into that Beis Medrash, they will understand what a sacred place it is in ways that you don't begin to notice every day because you take it for granted. He walked out, tears coming down his eyes. He says, you have no idea how special it is for me to see this. For me to see these young people having conversations with people from 800 years ago. Right? I mean, he was inspired, and I was inspired by that. As we walk out of the building, there's a bench in front of the building. I see four young guys who can only be ninth graders in MTA. And I looked at them. They weren't very happy. I said, hi, I'm Richard Joel. I work for you. unimpressed. I said, everything okay? They said, we missed our bus. I said, where are you from? They said, Jamaica State's Hollis-Wood and Hillcrest. I knew it. Yeah. I said, can I help you? They said, no, our teacher is trying to get the bus back. I said, okay. I said, well, while you're here, let me have the pleasure of introducing you to Father Joseph McShane, the president of Fordham University. Now they thought they were being punished for something. Right? Right? Think back, those years ago when you were a freshman. They looked at me kind of longingly. I said, say hello. I said, hi. He looks at them. He says, shalom. Okay. Then he says, do you speak Hebrew? Now each of them is saying, why didn't I go to, you know, TABC? What am I doing here? What's going on here? I said, well, answer, Father McShane. They said, Cain. Then he looks and he says, biblical or modern? I said, we have to go, Joe. Let's look. We started walking down the street. About 15, 20 feet later, he stops and he says, Richard, I made a mistake. I forgot to do something. I said, sure. He goes back to the boys who thought they had escaped with their lives. And he says, boys, I have something very important to tell you. He says, you must listen to me. He says, you must keep the covenant alive. He says, listen. He says, you must keep the covenant alive. He says, and don't miss the bus again. And he started walking down the street. Now I was in tears. Because I said, Joe, that was really beautiful. He said, you don't understand. My faith, my people have no status if you're not doing the keeping alive of the covenant. But he got it. He knew that we were a people, right? Because we had a deal with God. And we had the privilege of living a mandatory life where we could bring light from Torah to people. Right? That's a vision, guys. That matters. It fills you up. Wherever you're going to go, it fills you up. It's an amazing thing. You know this, Vart, but you know that the Kedusha of Har Sinai is a temporary Kedusha. Right? The mountain was Kodesh as long as Hashem was on it. There were Kolot and Brokim. He gave the Aseret HaDibrot. Right? When God left, the mountain was just a mountain. You can go there now and have a picnic if we can figure out which mountain it is. There's even a place in Sinai when we had Sinai. Right? Esther and I went along with lots of other people to a monastery called Santa Catarina, which is at the foot of a mountain. In Arabic, it's Jabal Musa. In Hebrew, it's Har Moshe. It's one of the places where tradition says it might have been Mount Sinai. And it was a low, it wasn't the highest of mountains. It was in a desolate area. It could have been. I went with a group. We stayed up. We went to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning. A Bedouin guide came and he floated up the mountain. We went with him. We davened Shacharis Kivasikir on top. On the off chance, it really was Har Sinai. But it was okay. We could do it. There's no Kedusha to Mount Sinai. There's another mountain called Moria, Har HaBayis. Kedusha on Har HaBayis is permanent. People will argue whether you can go up or not. I've never gone up to Har HaMoria. Har HaBayis, the Kedusha is eternal. Har Sinai it passed. How come? Why? So we're taught that what happened at Sinai, God came, gave us the Torah. What happened on Har HaMoria? We partnered with God to build a Beis HaMikdash. Right? When you're a shutuf with your Ribbono Shel'Olam, the Kedusha is eternal. The opportunity we have is not to be victims and not to be passive. We get to own our lives. We get to chart our destiny in partnership with the Ribbono Shel'Olam. And as long as what we're doing is building a temple to the glory of God, we have a life that can be great, that can be successful. You'll have the money and you'll have the success. Find the best friend with whom you can share a life. Educate yourselves in such a way that you're part of a network that matters. Aspire. Think about the life you want to live and the living you want to make. But think about the life you want to live. Now's the time to do that. The next years for you are unbelievably special. So when I lived in Washington, I would often visit Gallaudet University. Gallaudet is a university for deaf and hard of hearing students. It's a special place, but I liked it for a silly little reason. In their high school, which is called the Model School, in the lobby, there's a model of a little red schoolhouse. And on the casing of the model, there's a plaque with an inscription that's unattributed, although I'm sure it's Jewish. And this is what the plaque said. It said, there are only two lasting gifts that we can hope to bequeath to our children. One of them is roots, the other is wings. That's the vision of our people. You are in a place now, and you've been growing in a place, but here in Shalavim, the roots, Rav Waxman spoke about the tree symbolism, the roots are deep, and you're strengthening them, and you're fortifying them, so that you get to be rock solid in connection with the fortification and all the goodness you can get from Torah. Your roots are growing deep, and that will sustain you. But that will sustain you so that, to mix a metaphor, you get to spread your wings. You get to be al kanfei nesharim. You get to soar and see all that life has that it can give you and you can give to it. That's why you're here. That's why you go on to build. An honor to be able to talk with you and hopefully to be able to work for you and to watch as you build a future, to build a world for you and my children and grandchildren. Thank you very much. Can I make it safe for you? I'm a pretty easy guy to ask any questions you want. You want to ask questions about YU, about Hillel, about the Maccabees, which I was on their first CD, by the way. I'm on track 8 singing Rachel Mavaka Al Barneva. I was even in their video, right? And then they dumped me for my kid. So I'm an expert. I can badmouth the Maccabees if you'd like. I talk about anything about YU, I'm an expert on almost nothing, so I can give you expert opinions on all that. But let me make it safe. Any question, just tell me your name and where you're from. Someone will go first, right? Okay, your name and where you're from.
Ashi Schreier, from Windermere.
Right. You just passed your entrance exam.
What are your thoughts on the post-Pesach program?
I'll tell you how I thought as a parent. There was no post-Pesach program in our day, and there wasn't even a year and a half. It was Shana Aleph or Shana Bet. And I said to my children, we're not going to talk about this. We want you to go for a year. And we want you to view that year as a total experience, because it in fact is a wonderful experience. Right? If after January, you call up and you say, I've been thinking about this, I've been having a wonderful year, I want more time for the following reasons, you don't have to wait for an answer. The answer is going to be yes, but you shouldn't feel that you're more complete with 2 years than you are with one, or for a year and a half. Chanoch l'nar al pi darko, each of you have to decide what's right for you. Shalavim doesn't do bait and switch, where they give you a little bit of Torah and say, well, if you think this was good, wait till Shana Bet, you'll get so much more. They know they have you for a year, and if you choose more, they're happy to share more with you. Right? So if it's 1 year and you're moving on, that's fine. If it's a year and a half, that's fine. We built the post-Pesach program not to keep people from finishing their year or their second year. We built this because a lot of kids were coming home for Pesach and saying, okay, that's it. We're not going back. It doesn't pay. It's just a few weeks before it's over. Right, so we in fact said, don't waste it. So the first thing we did was offer them shir. In the last year or two, I think we've hit our rhythm, and we said, so come back and you'll have shir, and there are a couple of courses you can take, and you'll get acclimated to college. It's not gonna be culture shock. You're gonna come in and you'll start it. You'll start it with a more limited load, you know, and you'll be ready to take it on. And it's been very successful. In fact, I mean, this year I have more kids coming for post-Pesach than I had in January. So the yeshivas like it, because a lot of these kids are kids who would only do a year and a half, and now they're doing more. Right? I like it because it's not the shock treatment of doing a year or two, and then all of a sudden in August saying, I'm overwhelmed. It was so nice and cozy and no fire alone. Here I'm in this big thing, and I have this pressure, and I have this. You figure it out. But I think you have options. You have 1 year, and then you start school. You have a year and a half, and it's a natural entry. You have a year and more, and you do the post-Pesach thing, or you do 2 full years, or 3 full years, and then you come. I think it's fine. I still believe you should do 4 years at YU. I'll give you the year's credit happily. You've earned it. You've earned it, and you can graduate in 6 semesters, I promise. But I think the curriculum is so rich now, and the learning is so good right now, and you're still so darn young that you deserve not to have to figure out how to, with high pressure, put all of these courses into 6 semesters. There's enough that you have to choose from. That's why we do have a program that if you spend time in Israel, and in your first year you choose that you want to spend 4 years, we guarantee you that in your fourth year, tuition will not be more than 50% of tuition. Those are guaranteed a 50% scholarship. If you have need beyond that, you can apply beyond that. I really believe that you should, you could use an extra year learning. I think that if you take 12 credits a semester, it's more doable. I mean, even if you take 17 credits, I'll still see you when I visit the gym at 11 o'clock at night or look at the pool at 12:30. There are still guys in it. By the way, you can make it work. It's okay. That's what I think of the Plus PaySet program. You didn't trap me. Yes, sir. Michael
Bressler from St. Louis. Someone coming back from yeshiva, how can you be sure not to get caught up in all the secular studies and the college aspects and to keep your priorities straight?
You can't be sure. You can't be sure because life is what happens while you're busy making other plans. But at least meet CD, I'm sure you're supposed to struggle with it. I'm sure you're not supposed to live in a closet. We don't have monasteries for Jews. Right? And I think you take it on. I think, first look, and you're asking the wrong guy. I think you need to put yourself in a place like YU where there is the regilut of Torah. If you think you're set and you'll go to another college and you're going to have a morning shir every day and you're going to keep it up, I'm sure you'll intend to. It won't last. God forbid, I'm not saying you won't be from and I'm not saying you won't be able to learn. I'm telling you, you're not going to Hillel University. You're going to a secular university where you'll be able to find an island where you can do it. But even at YU, it's a real challenge because we're throwing a full education at you. The learning is not Yotze Zayin. It's serious learning. I think it's a warm and fine place. It's not as intimate as Shalavim is, right? Everybody isn't exactly of the type that chose exactly the same place. We try to be warm and good. If you're ever really in pain and no one's helping you, come see me. They'll try to put up a backstop there if they try to protect me. But you'll figure out a way to get through. But you have to keep your priorities. You have to aselech harav. I mean, have someone who you can talk to. For a lot of kids, it remains your Rebbe in Israel. There's a transition that takes place at a certain point. I think at YU, it's a complex place. You're going to realize there's not one answer man. And one of the nice things about YU is everybody's a Rosh Yeshiva. But the nice thing is we think Shivan Panim LaTorah. And within a basic notion that we believe you should be educated, we believe you should matter in the world, right? I have Rebbeim who are very different in their approaches to things. And you'll meet all of them, and you'll be able to learn from them. We have people who, you know, Rabbi J.J. Schefter is not one of the Rosh Yeshiva. He's a tremendous moral guide for you. Right? Mark Penner is the Associate Dean of REITs. He's someone who can really influence you well. Will Lee is not Jewish and teaches English, right? And is a tremendous push for you for Torah Umada. David Berger is the Dean of the Rebel School, and he's a profound scholar, and he's a profound Talmud Chacham, and all of these guys will make space for you. And the other thing I'll give you my advice, don't live in an apartment, live in the dorm. Right? If after the first year you want to go to an apartment, I don't agree with it, but you certainly do it. I think there's a support system and there's a chevershaft of being in the dorm that makes it a more intimate experience. And I think you should do that too. And I would say it makes sense, if you can, to make a contract with yourself. If you're not going to YU, you must do it. But if you are going to YU also, write yourself a letter. This is what's most important to me, and this is what I'm not going to give up. Right? I'm not going to, you know, Shacharis isn't going to be, how quickly can I put the tefillin on? Can I put the tefillin off? I'll say Ashrei. I'll say Shema Shema Esrei. I'll go. I need my time. For me, I'm a pretty busy guy. Right? If I can't carve out moments of intimacy, and sometimes I can't, but if I can't, I'm a much lesser person. Okay, I daven, you know, I live in Riverdale, so I can daven at the Riverdale Jewish Center where they expect me. It's the county seat. You know, I should be there. There's no, one of my trustees who's German said, there's no Makam Kavua here. You will sit in the first row next to me. You know, and there, frankly, if I go like this, there are 60 people who say, look at that, the president of YU scratching his left nostril. What does that mean? Right? I go to a little shul instead. I go there sometimes. They're very nice. I'm just telling you I'm on. Right? When I go to the Young Israel of North Riverdale, there are 50, 60 people. On the Yom Norev, I'm the Shliach Tzibur. They're very nice. They call me President Joel, and I only get Shlishi. But they don't much care. Right? And I get to be, I'm not on view. And I get to daven. And I get to have moments of myself. That's really precious for me. I really work to try to have kavana in my davening because I'm safe there. It's just the ultimate judge, but I'm willing to put myself in his hands. It's not the 5 million Jews, all of whom want to tell me what to do and all of whom are talking about me. Right? This is safe for me. You got to find your safe place. Right? I try to have a chavrusa. By the way, I used to learn a whole lot more before I was president of Yeshiva University. I joked that I used to be Shomer Shabbos before I was president of Yeshiva University. Now Shabbos is a work day. But that's all I need. It's on the recording. You know, President Shabbos, not Shomer Shabbos. I think, make a list for yourself. Who is the person you're going to call Waxman regularly? Right? You don't call. I'm sorry. Call is a telephone. We used to have phones. Text! Rabbi Waxman, or your Rebbe. Not every week, and I'm not saying, I really don't believe that only your Rebbe in Israel is your moral guide. Your parents are, your friends are, Rabbeim at YU are going to be, and regular people too. Find them. Decide what you want to read. Pick some books that you want to read. Be deliberate in choosing what you're studying. Don't be afraid. And make time for fun. Make time for fun. Participate in the extracurricular activities. I hope you'll forgive me. I hope you participate in the co-ed activities. Right? They're all proper. Remember that the other 51% of the population are not objects. They're human beings, probably smarter than you. You get to talk to them directly. Lightning doesn't come down from heaven and strike you. Okay, but if that's not your derech, and there's nobility to another way as well, that has its place at yeshiva as well. That has its place well. And if you're going to, we have YU Connects. We're the only university, I think, with its own Shatfana service. Right? And they provide opportunities for you to meet in different ways at different times the way you want. Decide what you want and celebrate your life. And the most important thing, be aware. Be aware. Feel it. Don't just schlep along. And I will tell you that sometimes I marvel at how people do it because it's a heavy learning and it's heavy education and how can I possibly do it and I'm pre-med. I have to tell you, they all do it, right? And they celebrate it because you find time, you make it work for you. You can do that. I'm great at short answers. Any other? Yes, sir.
Donnie Weinberger from TNAP.
Donnie
Weinberger. Weinberger,
kind of.
I've heard from a number of students that this year and going back 5 or 6 years, that the pre-med at YU, the courses are rigorous, I mean, obviously rigorous everywhere, but in terms of the grades, they're very, very, I don't want to say unfair, but they're very limited and restricted in how many days will be given out per semester per course. And I know that YU will answer and say that they still have a very high percentage of kids getting to medical school, but I think that's because a lot of people will drop pre-med and change their career courses before they get to that point. So
as a patient, I'm glad they're dropping.
is there a reason why the courses are, in terms of the grades, are so difficult in terms of giving out the grades?
It's interesting. That's the hop. I have no reason to believe that's the case. We are changing the curriculum, not right now, but the pre-med education is changing. Some of the things that were considered absolute are no longer so much considered absolute. I will also tell you part of this, and I don't know if it's happening or not. I will tell you there's an interesting thing going on. Frankly, so far, I've had more women from Stern admitted to Einstein than I've had guys. And that's not a factor of harder grades. And I would also tell you that our figure of acceptances to medical school is really way up there. It's like it's absolutely Ivy League competitive, of numbers, of sheer numbers. I think something's right. The first thing that's right is you guys are very significant, and you're performing really well. Secondly, the reputation of yeshiva is that they prepare you well, and you know how to do rigorously. Thirdly, you know that the MCAT is real important in this, and you can tell me good grades, bad grades. I'll also tell you now, I have a problem with Einstein, because so many people are being accepted from YU to Einstein that I've hit the number that 15% of the entering class are now YU undergraduates. That pretty much rivals how many undergraduates from Penn go to Penn Medical and how many undergraduates from Harvard go to Harvard Medical. So I got to keep pushing the envelope. But you're doing real well. You're also doing real well in other professional schools. So, by the way, we're doing this. I've never said this out loud because it just happened last week. We're building all kinds of things to allow you to be more competitive and more prepared. So Einstein is prepared to offer a program now with when you come to school, if you'll be interviewed and you'll get accepted. It's an enrichment program that doesn't give you a degree, but gives you a certificate and something for the resume. And basically what we're talking about is on Fridays, a bus will take you to Einstein, and you'll be able to have some classes from Einstein faculty, and we'll also build in research opportunity for you, which gives you an enormous leg up in terms of applying for medical schools, not necessarily Einstein. Right? And we're trying to do those things without killing you. I mean, the big deal is that I want you to have a great experience and a balanced experience, but a rigorous experience. This is, I mean, you know, it's work time. Yes?
Danny Ambalu, Queens, New York. What makes Wash University, Yeshiva University different from like a Zagonga Yeshiva and college on the side, Zagonga Shire House in Queens or something?
It's a good question. I mean, the what makes Yeshiva University different from going to a secular, like Queens and a Yeshiva? Before I get to the substance, I'll tell you the reality. The reality is you're going to say you're going to do that, you're not going to do it. Yeah, I go to Shire House. I go to DRS. Good things. I'm not saying one thing bad. But talk to your friends and tell me how many hours a week they spend after a semester, how many hours they're spending learning. So that's question number one. You can answer that one for yourselves, okay? It's a serious question. Question number two, I don't think we're just a yeshiva and a college that happen to be in proximity to each other. I think it's Yeshiva University. It's a real, you're in a, number one, you are in an environment, in, unless you think college is Yotze Zayin. Let me say number one, it's a quality academic experience. It's not, I check off, I did this course, I did this course, I did this course, I have 400 people in my lectures and I have 74 teaching assistants. Right? The student-faculty ratio, the student-faculty ratio at YU is 8 to 1. The average class size is, I think, 13.3. That 0.3 student, you shouldn't get too close. There's really opportunity. It's a small liberal arts school. You get to know people. I think that matters. But I will also tell you that Torah Umada is not Torah Umada. And neither is it that every course and every shir is homogenized. But somehow, you're in a place of creative tension, where you're living in a community of several thousand people who all share your views, and not exactly, but basically share your worldview, right? Where a good number of your academic courses will be provocative and taught by people who are very aware and sympathetic to, even if not Jewish, the fact that this is a yeshiva environment and what that means. Right? Your entire extracurricular and co-curricular life is all about understanding that you are a Orthodox Jew trying to work in the world. You know, we send 480 students to 83 communities on Torah tours. Right? It's a really fine thing. We do service learning programs, and we're doing more and more, and soon they're going to be for credit. And they're both Jewish and they're academic, and they're not open to you if you're not at Yeshiva University. I had a group of students come up to me when I was taking a tour of the Israel Museum. I had two groups come up to me. So first of all, I was shocked that Yeshiva College students would be at the Israel Museum, but not unhappy. And they came up to thank me because they had participated in a course, a semester-long course, called War and Peace and Ethics. And it was taught by Shalom Carmi of our Jewish Studies department and Professor Adrian Ash, who's an ethicist. And then they spent the last 10 days in Yerushalayim dealing with issues of war and peace and ethics here. And they just came up to thank me to tell me how happy they were. That's why you need the integrated life. The final thing I'll say, you guys don't want to build a life of Torah where you're also earning a living. You want to build an integrated life based on Torah. You do that by being in a place where you're not schizoid, where the place works together, challenging you, but making it happen. But I don't know how I feel about it. Gentlemen, you're wonderful. I don't want you to miss your Chloe. I'm really honored that you put up with me, and I look forward to seeing you. And there's a place of working for you. Thank you very much.